What's going on, people? Welcome to the Howls and Growls show. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting, creator of the Howls and Growls Timberwolves newsletter. And this podcast is proudly brought to you by Canis Hoopus and SB Nation. We are back today with another Howls and Growls episode, back today with Cooper Carlson from Timberwolves Daily. As usual, as is the case with all the episodes I do with Cooper, he will be leading the conversation for his YouTube channel again. Timberwolves Daily, go and subscribe to that channel, hit the notifications, do all that good stuff on YouTube. And yeah, he'll be leading the conversation. We talk about Karl Anthony Towns' injury, obviously, the void that Anthony Edwards has had to step up and step into, a little bit about Jalen Noel, a little bit about Jaden McDaniels, a little bit about the defense, a lot of everything, that kind of just a gaze across the Timberwolves landscape. So yeah, hopefully you enjoyed the episode, and here it is now.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to Timberwolves Daily YouTube channel. We're here to talk after a win for, I think, the first time today with Jake Painting. It's going to be fun. The last couple of conversations, while fun, have been very sad. Jake, how are you, man? Shout yourself out. What do you do? How's this season been treating you?
I'm good. Obviously, if you've listened, you know, listened to this show before, watch this show with me, I am from Howls and Growls, creator of Howls and Growls, Timberwolves newsletter, so you can go check that out at howsandgrowls.substack.com or kind of follow me on Twitter, Jake Painting. I am feeling like this season's already been 75 games long, and we're only in the 22nd game, 23rd game coming up, so I am feeling a little bit drained just by the season as a whole already. It's been a pretty up and down, and the downs have been really low and the highs have been really high, so yeah, a little bit drained, but definitely not too drained to talk about the Wolves with you, obviously, and that game against Memphis was a good way to perk the season back up, so I'm excited.
Yeah, this Memphis game was maybe the third or fourth where I've gone, that's the turnaround, now we've hit our stride, here we go, watch out NBA. So
the problem is the rest of them haven't by an actual turnaround.
It's been, I think, game like 5 versus the Lakers. The Pacers won a couple weeks ago now. Now this one. And I'm hoping, third time's a charm, the turnaround is here. With the big elephant, the 7-foot elephant in the room being Karl Anthony Towns, injured. And when Cat went down, he was versus a couple games ago either way, and he pulled the hamstring or the calf, pretty much the leg, and it was just kind of up in the air. Was he going to be out the game, weeks, months, year? Came out later on 4 to 6 weeks for Karl Anthony Towns. And honestly, there wasn't a lot of, like, panic on Wolves' Twitter sphere. It was more of like, okay, interesting. Which was
We've been through worse than a 6-week Karl Anthony Towns injury. Yeah, scarred to the point of no return.
Yeah, we all have the mindset, or we had the mindset at the time of like, okay, let's see what this looks like then. And game one came around. And the Wolves legitimately had more fight, more professionalism, more just composure and will to win than I think we've seen in almost any other game this year. It's a small sample size, one game sample size. We have a 22 or so game sample size with Cat. Things are weird. People are wanting, you know, it's hashtag trade Cat already, but I'm definitely not there. But we'll see. I mean, I don't want to say what are your thoughts on that, because obviously you're not trying to trade Cat, but like, your thoughts on just the team performance against the Grizzlies, and is there any indictment on Karl Anthony Towns from that game?
Oh, man, it's such a loaded question.
I know. I don't know how to even get it out. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because it's the obvious thing to point at, first of all, is that it was one game. They still had a lot of the same problems in terms of shooting the ball. They turned the ball over a lot, although not as many times as Memphis. And they still had spells, you know, in the second quarter where things looked like they could fall apart at any moment. That being said, they looked better for longer than they have in pretty much any other game outside of maybe that Indiana Pacers game. So the question needs to be asked. Like you said, like there's no point. We can't sidestep around the question. And I think for me, the answer is obviously wait and see. But the definites here are that the Wolves play better without two bigs. That's been the case all season, even when they're both playing and one of them is on the bench. And that's an indictment
that's
on the
terrible.
That's an indictment on the trade as a whole, and that's a whole other conversation probably. But in terms of Karl-Anthony Towns missing, I think you miss some offense, which you need to then replace with the obvious in Anthony Edwards. But you're going to need more from D'Angelo Russell. You're going to need more from Jalen Noel, who is obviously awesome. That's a big chasm in the middle of that starting unit, or just the team as a whole offensively. But the one thing that I'm almost definite on, and it has to do with the two bigs as well, is they're better defensively when Karl isn't playing. And I don't think that we're naive enough at this point in his career to just pretend like that isn't the case. Like, he isn't a good defender. He's been even worse this season at the four. He was good last season in the high wall scheme, but a lot of that was covered up by the fact that he had like at least three really, really energetic guys around him at all times, covering the backside, making flying for rotations. And Towns was really just asked to step up above the level of the screen, trap or contain the ball handler with someone else helping him, and then get back to the role man at a leisurely pace, because Vando or Pat Bev or Jaden McDaniels was probably going to cover that role man until he got back there. So that was a smoke and mirrors scheme in general. And now playing the four, a new position, there's no smoke and mirrors anymore. It's just a mirror of him looking at himself and seeing what he is. And he's not a good defender. And this team will be better defensively, whether it's schematically with Gobert and drop, or just in general because Towns isn't out there. They will be better. And Kyle Anderson, I mean, I've lasted 6 minutes before bringing up Kyle Anderson, but like, he's a really good defender and a really good fit next to Gobert, as long as he can hit like one or two threes a game. And he hit two against Memphis, and he's been knocking them down all season. So that was a long-winded answer, but I do think that offensively, there's a hole that needs to be filled, and I'm not sure every game they'll be able to fill it. And defensively, I think they'll be better in general, because I think they're better without Towns on the floor defensively. And I think he's gotten worse this season. I think this is his worst defensive season of his career to date. So, I mean, that's my answer, is it's still muddied waters, but there's real benefits and there's real, consequences to him not being out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, this isn't just Cat's bad or anything, of course.
Yeah, it's so nuanced.
Right. It's a very tough conversation. And honestly, the first thing you said is probably like, it's a horror movie title. The Wolves are bad with two bigs. Like, Jesus, man. You are you kidding me? But like, you're right. But either way, Cat being out, like you mentioned all the on the court stuff. Offense will take a hit. They're going to need guys to step up. Defensively, they're going to be they're going to be better without Cat, especially on the floor. But then there's a lot of conversation about how hard they played and just how professional they looked and the culture that was there and against Memphis. And a lot's drawn back to all the knocks on Karl-Anthony Towns for being not the leader that most would want, and just, you know, the foul trouble stuff. And to me, this has been Cat's best year in terms of like being a leader and limiting the antics, the Cat-isms, or just the stray voltage. Yeah. The stray voltage catisms.
I'm stealing catisms for sure.
Anyway, I thought it's been probably the best year, but there's still games or stretches of games where the team just is genuinely painful to watch. And I'm like, I have to go live after this stupid game. They're down 40 to the Raptors. And it's like, that team was not the team we saw against Memphis. And yes, they've shown up in other periods of the season against, you know, the Pacers or Lakers or whatever in big moments. And maybe this was just Memphis showing up. Maybe tomorrow against OKC, the day this is published, they'll come out and look like that team again. But after one game, the culture questions come back about Karl-Anthony Towns, and how could they not? This team showed more life and looked more fun than they have all season. And that's kind of my thing. My whole thing is like, yes, Cat's a phenomenal basketball player, phenomenal basketball talent. But at some point, I don't know, like, the quad of Finch, Gobert, Towns, D'Lo, like, they're not all going to be around forever, and you can't trade Towns this season because of the contract and all that, but, like, if the Wolves play with just unreal, It's so, you can't even like track it with stats, but just the heart they play with will be big. Without Cat for these next 4 to 6 weeks, and then reinserting him, seeing where it goes from there. I'm really intrigued by all the off-the-court stuff, or I guess the non-statistical stuff, almost as much as I am by the offensive-defensive side of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you can't track it
right,
statistically. It's a feeling that I think kind of reverberates around the entire fan base, is that he has this anxious energy on the court, and like when you look around the league at the best teams and the best players on those teams, you know, Jason Tatum doesn't have an anxious energy on the court. Steph Curry certainly doesn't. Luka Doncic occasionally, but he's so freaking good that it doesn't matter. Like when you need somebody to step up, I don't trust Karl Anthony Towns to be the guy who steps up. And I don't want to bash Karl Anthony Towns because he does a lot of great things. But I think the problem with him, and maybe, I mean, like you said, we need to see a bigger sample size before we can make these sweeping declarations. But the problem that we didn't see the other night that we've seen for 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons is that the gap between his great skills and his ones that really hurt the team are so wide that, like, depending on what one you get is depending on how impactful he is and how impressive the team is. Like, I was just looking it up then as you were talking, like, he shot 25% in the clutch this season, Karl Anthony Towns. And I know that clutch scoring is pretty...
It's the best we got.
Yeah, it's the best we've got. It's not the way you can define a leader, but at the end of the day, when this team is, say, it's 3 points with 2 minutes left, I don't think there's many fans in the fan base that would say, just give the ball to Cat and let him shoot the next 10 shots until this game is over. And that's an indictment on him as a leader, not as a player, because not every player in the league can shoot 10 clutch shots and be trusted to be the guy who wins you a game. The problem is that the franchise has geared themselves toward that, like that he has to be that guy. And now you're in the situation where it's kind of like, well, we're leaning into this Karl Anthony Towns as the absolute face of the franchise, when maybe we should be leaning into Anthony Edwards more, or decreasing Karl Anthony Towns' role and trying to maximize the team as a whole. And I don't know, it's a tough place to be because Cat can still be so good as a second or third option, but at the moment he's treated like a leader. He wants to play like a leader, which is fine. Like, you want every good player to want to be that guy, but we've just had ample sample size of him not being that guy. And now he's gone, and that vacuum, that power vacuum that he's taking too much of is being filled by Anthony Edwards, who I think clearly has that gene in him to be that guy, although he is too inconsistent as a performer. And so there's just like a disconnect here with me, you know, with the fan base, with the team, on what path they should be taking going forward from a leadership perspective. And right now, they're being forced to lean into Ant, and maybe this will be the month or 6 weeks that kind of cements that is the option to take, the route to take.
Right. I'll throw this one at you. How many times have we seen Karl Anthony Towns do what Ant did last night? Or Ant, I mean, that you can...
Thought about this today while I was at work, wishing I was sitting on the couch. I was just thinking about this podcast, and I knew we'd be talking about something along these lines. Mm-hmm. And I just cannot remember a time where a game was in the balance. And Cat's had big fourth quarters, he's had big second halves before, but where the entire narrative after the game was that Karl Anthony Towns just rip this game away from the Memphis Grizzlies or from any other team. Like, that's just not his style. And it shouldn't have to be his style, but again, this franchise has made it have to be his style for too long now. And now we're seeing, at least in a one-game sample size, we're seeing what it looks like without all that pressure on his shoulders.
Yeah, I think Cat can excel as the 1B. Because right now it's Ant settling in as the 1B or like 2, but absolutely. I mean, we've seen it from Ant. It's not just a go out and score in the fourth quarter. It's a mental thing. Screaming at Dylan Brooks, getting the crowd all hyped up, like, just exuding confidence. That's not Cat. Cat can be the best scorer, like, ever, but it just, he's not the guy to just put the team on his back and just confidently go win a game. And that's okay. Like, that's the expectation for 1% of players in the league. This is not critiquing, this is not, like, criticizing Cat or anything. It's like, he can't be a top 5 player in the league. Like, that's fine. That's just how some players are, and that's how most players are. Like, Cat's still exceptional at what he does well. It's just probably time in this 4 to 6 weeks that Anthony Edwards really transitions into being that face of the franchise guy, and we're kind of seeing it. And it, to me, this was posed to me in like one of the comment sections. How many superstars, like, we wanted Ant to take that year 3 leap, and we're starting to see it a little, but how many guys that take that leap have been the B on their team? Like, not many, right? Yeah. Ja Morant, Jason Tatum.
And how many, like, of them have a team that's expected to win 53 games, you know, before the season? Like, it's, the year 3 leap thing kind of bothers me, just because, one, I think it's a little overblown that all of these guys just became superstars in year 3. Like, they all got better, and I don't think Anthony Edwards definitively had a better season than last season. I think probably in some areas he has, in some areas he hasn't. But, like, to expect a Ja Morant leap, which is the name that always gets thrown around, the Ja Morant third-year leap, like, Ja went from averaging, like, 19 points a game to being an MVP candidate. Like, that's the that expectation is super ridiculous, you know? Like, and that doesn't mean Anthony Edwards shouldn't have massive expectations, because he's got the talent to fulfill them. But I just think that, like you said, he hasn't really been put in the situation where he can go and shoot 25 shots in a game on the nights where he doesn't have it. Like, Donovan Mitchell was allowed to shoot 25 shots a game from year 2, and Rudy Gobert was the second best player, and we now know that Gobert isn't the kind of guy who's going to cannibalize an offense. And Tatum, the same thing. Like, he had Brown next to him, but Brown was still growing at that time as well. The Celtics had a few down years in Tatum's first few seasons. Like, these guys have had the room to make the mistakes and to grow still into their third year, and had that room in his first season. He had a little bit less of that room last season. And this season, he pretty much has no room for error.
No.
And, especially, like, this whole franchise, that should be their motto, like, their hashtag on Twitter, is that they have no room for error. And, you know, it's just, it's hard. And I don't want to be making excuses for Ant not bringing it every night, because I think that's the baseline of, you know, what we should expect is competitiveness every single game. But I just think that the judgment that he receives this season because of what the franchise has done in the offseason, and because of the situation he's in with Cat as 1A, usually, it's a hard place to all of a sudden go and average 28-7-7. Like, but now is his time to do it. So I guess now is the time where that either proves correct what I'm saying, or it does sound like I'm just making excuses.
Right. And that's the biggest storyline of this whole thing. Like, I mean, it was, again, when Cat went down, it wasn't like panic button. It was more like, let's see Anthony Edwards then. Okay.
Well, it had just been so shit that, like, we were ready for any change.
I mean, absolutely. It was horrendous. It was not fun to watch. It was just bad. It was a lot of just, like, really? 8 years of this? Like, it was bad. We were in a bad, I was in a bad spot. We all were. But then, I mean, again, game one, and this biggest storyline of the whole thing is Anthony Edwards. He's going to be able to just basically take over, like, him and Rudy Gobert are now the two best players. Like, D'Lo is still going to get his. Noel is going to get 15 to 45 shots a game still. Like, they're all going to be, there's still guys here, but Ant is now the clear and away number one player. And I think him and Rudy are actually building some chemistry here. As much as they may hate each other, if you Google Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, they do hate each other, according to many people.
It's the Kevin O'Connor time continuum. It's
the agenda, yeah. But hey, just for that, Ant did post on Instagram today that assist to Rudy Gobert, so maybe they like each other just a little bit. I'm into that stuff, but it's good. I mean, I think they're building chemistry. I think this whole team, really. And that's good. It's been, I mean, we're at the 20-game sample size that everyone throws out, which is valid. You got to wait 20 games before you really see what a team's all about. And we're kind of getting the new version of the team now, of course. But to me, Anthony Edwards, coming into his own as a leader and with, like, just building chemistry with the guys on the team, D'Angelo Russell, Rudy Gobert. I like a lot more of what I'm seeing just in terms of his own play, but also just the guys around him playing with Anthony Edwards. And just, you get what I'm saying? Like, your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to quantify leadership in one specific, you know, sentence or statistic, but you can feel it. You can feel it when you watch it, and that game last night, or not for, I don't know, I'm losing track of days in this Wolves season, but yeah, that game was, it was the kind of game that it just felt different. Like that fourth quarter, but even throughout the game, it was the blocks, the rotations, you know, the pre-rotations on defense where he's, you know, he's two passes away and he's already moving to stop a guy at the rim who hasn't even thought about getting there yet himself. Like, that's stuff I've never seen him do. And whether that was just because he loves playing against Memphis and, you know, he knows that the spotlight is on him in those games and on Ja as a kind of two-man rivalry. But that's something that even in big games, I haven't seen. Even last season in the playoffs where he was awesome, he wasn't doing the stuff that he was doing last night defensively, two nights ago. I'm just going to keep saying last night and pretend that it was. And it was just, it just felt different. It felt like he understood the assignment, you know, like that he had been told before the game that we are going to lose every game unless you are the Anthony Edwards that we all think you can be. And whether he can do that against Oklahoma City on, you know, a Saturday night, a sleepy Saturday night, like, is he going to be able to bring that same rambunctious energy to a game? I'm not sure. And that's the difference right there, because we've seen him have, I don't know if we've ever seen him have a better regular season game.
Yeah, Chris Finch said the same thing.
But we've seen him have great games. Like, we've seen him drag the team to wins. I remember, this is probably a random one, but, like, I remember last season against Portland, in Portland, I think he might have had, he had over 40, and it was just one of those, that was the game that just sticks in my mind where I was like, this guy is the leader, even if he's not ready to be it yet. Like, because no one else on this team can do what he did in that game, and that wasn't even as close to as impressive as this game, but he just took over, and all night he was aggressive, and he was, you know, just every time Portland made a run, he would hit a three or he would get a dunk, and it was one of those nights where
he had the and one three, I think, in that game, right? If I remember correctly,
yep. And they were running offense through him. He had 40 points, 9 rebounds, 3 steals, and 3 blocks. So just a casual night on the town. but it was similar to that game where it was the defense, it was just everything. And last night was like a step above that, even if he didn't have a 40 burger. But I don't know. I like I said, I don't know how to quantify it, but you could see it. I could see it. Everyone watching it could see it and feel it. That if this is the Anthony Edwards we get every night, then this whole direction of the franchise changes. It doesn't matter about the two bigs or how Gobert and Cat fit, like, all of that will fall into place if Anthony Edwards is that good every game.
Yeah, I bet he knew our good friend Kyle Teige was in attendance that night. I bet that's what it was, out in Portland.
That'll henceforth be known as the Kyle Teige night.
Yeah, it's good stuff, but you're absolutely right. It's just, you can't quantify it, and I wish I could, because I love statistics, but man, it's just about what you see with the eye test. It's tough, man, because it's, in all the sports, it's the Kirk Cousins theory, if you follow the Vikings at all, but better at it this year. Either way, you're absolutely right. Anthony Edwards, just really on a new level, and for what it's worth, like, I was watching that, the Wolves are funny, because they put out a 5-minute little mini-movie about the Grizzlies' regular season game, which I thought was good.
I know.
But either way, at the end,
it was good to watch, but it was cringy as well.
It was. The first comment was like, are you kidding me? But like, either way, Ant at the end was like telling the whole team, hey, if we bring this energy every night, no one can stop us. And he was like, hey, man, just like, you're the energy guy. Like, that's you. But yeah, tomorrow night against OKC.
You could almost hear everyone else's thoughts.
Yeah, just like, thinking you need to bring the energy every night.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night against OKC, however he comes out, I think it'll be really important just to see the team as well. Saturday night, OKC, they suck. Like, They're not good. You gotta win that game, and you gotta win it pretty good. It can't, like, the Miami Heat game was a lot of fun, but 105 to 101 against a lot of terrible players was really, it's a strange game. Either way.
Yeah. I think the best way to, like, stamp this new, you know, mantra or whatever this new kind of Wolves is with Cat out is to, like, come out and win by 25.
Right. Yep.
Like, then there's no other excuses. There's no, oh, well, you know, they only just stepped over the line or they didn't shoot well from three. There's nothing that you can point to be like, this is unsustainable. If they go out there and they just hammer OKC, then we can probably sit back down again and say, all right, like, this is something different now.
Yeah, that's a good point because, again, the Heat game just sticks out to me because it was like the mid-third quarter and they were losing by 10. And then Jordan McLaughlin was like, I am Steph Curry. And that was a strange game. Either way.
That was the boo gate, wasn't it? That was the start of boo gate.
I think it was. Yeah. 30 seconds. You like the booing or you not like the booing?
This will rattle some feathers no matter what way I answer. I don't like the booing. I don't think it works. And that's my problem with it. If it worked, if they played better every time they booed,
fair,
then I would understand the booing. But they seem to, this team is not mentally strong enough to handle their own home crowd turning on them. I also want to say that if you pay for a game, you can do whatever the hell you want. Like, if you pay to go and watch the Timberwolves be garbage, then you can tell them that they're garbage as loud as you want. But I also don't think, I think if the point of going to the game is to help them win, then I wouldn't boo because it doesn't help.
Yeah, but I guess it gets to a point down 40. You're not, you know, whatever you do isn't going to help them win. So I get it. If you're probably two beers in as well. You're just like, come on, guy, you're booing. Like, I get it. I do. I don't have an issue with the booing, but we'll move on right now because my God, I think me and Kyle literally talked about booing for 20 minutes. It was interesting, but we'll move on. Like I keep saying, let's talk about the young guys, namely, Wendell Moore Jr. Who I know that's about as exciting as topic as it gets. I made a whole video on him today. Everyone go check that out. It was a lot of fun. Wendell Moore Jr.
I bet you didn't expect to be doing that 22 games in 2 seasons.
I love because you gotta like title him good too. So I'm like Wendell Moore Jr. is exactly what the Timberwolves need or some chat. But
just for him to not play again.
Right? Either way, got his first career start. It was weird because it was announced like Ant starting, Jalen Noel, D'Lo, Gobert, and Anderson. We were like, okay, Jalen Noel's getting the start. And then they were like, update, not only is Jalen Noel not starting, it's the guy who hasn't gotten any rotational minutes this year, Wendell Moore Jr., thrown into the starting lineup. And I think Finch pushed exactly the right button there. Wendell came out with just he was a really solid role player. Like statistically he didn't light up the box score. I think he had 7 points, 1 assist, 1 steal, a couple rebounds, a couple assists. But either way, I think he shot like what, 3 for 6 or something. I don't remember exactly, but he had a solid night. Defensively, he got the Ja Morant assignment. It's not like he was just hidden in the corner. He was put into the starting lineup because Finch wanted a player that could play defense, like he was inserted for Jalen Noel. And he got the toughest assignment on defense. And he did not look over his head, really, whatsoever. He came out and really impressed me. And, you know, maybe he just goes right back to not playing with McLaughlin, Prince, McDaniels all coming back. But it was a sign to me, like, maybe, I mean, again, this team has been lifeless and just painful to watch at times. And Wendell Moore Jr. was a breath of fresh air with the energy and the professionalism he came out and played with. I don't know where I'd put him in the rotation, but they gotta find room for him somewhere, I think. It's just, he really impressed me. What do you think? What were your first impressions of Wendell Moore Jr.?
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Well, I mean, what else can you say? Like, you get thrown in the deep end, the deepest of ends. Like, really? I can't even fathom why, how hard that would have been for him as a player to go from G League minutes and to guarding Ja Morant. And I mean, he did as well as you could ask him to do. I think that some of the, you know, Wendell Moore is going to lock up perimeter players for the rest of his life is probably a little bit overblown, but he was good. He more than anything, the feeling I got when I was watching it is that even not even knowing if he was going to start or even maybe play, he just understood the game plan against Morant. And I think that any player who guarded him would have the same game plan, which was force him to reject screens and force him into the help, which was obviously Rudy Gobert. And that's a good game plan because you can force people into Rudy Gobert in like that short mid-range area.
Then it's you win.
Probably. Yeah. then you beat the Grizzlies easily. And, you know, he did really well at that. And then he moved the ball. Move the ball was such a big one because it's just not, shouldn't be that hard to just like not dribble the ball a lot. And that seems to be a problem on this Timberwolves team. Like, but right now they seemed like they needed a guy who could just get off the ball quickly, move around, hunt space for shots. Even if he wasn't going to get the ball or wasn't going to shoot those shots when he got them, it was just like get open, get free, make someone guard you, cut, move without the ball, set screens, and then when you get the ball, just give it to someone who's better than you and get out of the way. Like, and that's a problem. I don't want to rehash the cat stuff, but like, there's the old kind of stereotype of like, there's too many balls out there, too many people who need the ball on the court. I do think that's true on this team, and not having Towns out there and replacing him pretty much with a guy who purely just wants to give the ball to someone else, that really, I think, helps solidify the hierarchy. And obviously, we saw Ant benefit from that. We saw D'Lo, I think, benefit from not having the feeling that he has to get the ball to someone else all the time and, you know, try and balance that weird balance that he's been trying to do, which is like, should I score? Should I pass? Do I need to just get out the way completely? Like, should I just space the floor? I think D'Lo's a weird one because I'm going off on a tangent here, but D'Lo's weird because for him to play his best, you kind of need to build an offense or some part of the offense around him, but he's also not good enough to do that. So, like, when he's having to be, the second best player on the court, the second best offensive player, all of a sudden, I think he feels more comfortable. And Wendell Moore made that possible because he looked for D'Lo all the time. He'd move the ball up the floor quick and then just like slam on the brakes and give it to D'Lo. Or he'd, you know, get the ball in a pick and roll and make that one pass away to D'Lo straight away. And same goes for Ant. Same goes for, you know, Jalen Noel when he was on the court. So I just think that having a very, very low usage defender who's not Josh
Okogie. Who can score? Right. I was literally going to say who's not Josh Okogie.
Yeah. Like, that's there. Or even Austin Rivers has a bit of that Josh Okogie feel as well, where like, it wasn't four like, on five. It wasn't 4-on-5
right.
when.
Like, Moore the ball doesn't get in his hands and you're like, well, this one's over. It's like.
Yeah. And they have to. And I think Memphis probably not even having a scouting report on Moore at all probably helped because they were a little bit like, should we go and guard him? Like, do we stay off him? Do we, you know, pressure him on the ball? Is he a great passer? Like, I think that all worked in their favor. The one three that he did hit, Morant kind of just like scouting reported himself and just said, like, I'm not going to guard him out there. And he hit the three. And I think after that, that probably helped even more because they were like, we don't really know what to do with this kid because we don't know who he is. Like, he might just be a fan that they found in the third row.
Wendell Moore? Like, yeah. Who? That's good. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I remember that three because he got the ball and looked like he was about to pass. Noticed he was really wide open, dribbled once, noticed he was still really wide open, and then was like, all right, God, I'll shoot the ball, and it went in.
He was like, good. Is there someone else who can take this ball away from me? And then he's like, you know, I'll just...
I'll just bury the shot, you know, whatever. Yeah. But either way, like, I maybe look for his shot a bit more, but overall, I thought he played a really solid game. Again, I don't know if he fits, where he fits, when these guys return. By the way, McDaniels off of the injury report, McLaughlin questionable for tomorrow. Prince still out, but either way, guys are coming back. I'm the whole Cat thing, that was yesterday without Cat, Prince, McLaughlin, and McDaniels, and there's not exactly culture questions about those other three, so I'm excited to see this team with all of its role players minus Cat to see what it looks like in full force.
I want to see Jaden McDaniels, man, in this game. I've said it before, I've been hammering this drum for a while now, like, I'm pretty sure Jaden McDaniels is their most important player. And like I think I would die on that hill because they suck without him. Like, they would do it against Memphis, and but the two games because
they had Wendell.
Wendell McDaniels Jr. but like he's just like he's a top five right this season. He's a top five defender in the entire league. Like, I don't want to go too homer here, but like he is ridiculous defensively. In terms of, obviously, point of attack stuff, getting through screens. He is a rim protector somehow as well.
He's unbelievable at rim protection.
Even though he has to guard the best opponents, you know, the opponent's best perimeter player all game, he somehow blocks heaps of shots. And, you know, if he's around the rim, people just don't score. And he's also great off the ball. When they do, teams on purpose, probably for the last maybe 10 games, have, like, ran sets to get him away from the point of attack and just have a few possessions where they don't have to deal with McDaniels hounding the ball. And then he just makes plays off the ball. Like, he'll just get, like, a passing lane steal or something, or, like, he'll come and dig into the elbow from, like, 45 feet away, and his arm just, like, takes the ball away. I'm going full homer on Jaden McDaniels right now, but he's ridiculous. And I want to see him... I mean, he should be getting the third most shots on this team, right? Maybe fourth after Noel, like, without Cat there. Like, is there a chance that Jaden McDaniels fills 15 a game for this stretch?
Why not? So.
I think he's averaging maybe 11 or 12.
I think he's at least up to that many, yeah, for sure.
So, like, I don't see why he doesn't get, say, four more shots a night or five more shots a night. And, like, what if we end this Catless stretch with Jaden McDaniels averaging 17 points a game, and he's one of the best defenders in the league. Like, all of a sudden, the eventual, if it is eventual, trade Cat, you know, world feels a lot better when, if McDaniels is like, oh, he might actually be like a 20-point a night scorer one day and one of the best defenders in the league. Like, that's a big step from where we're at right now, but I honestly don't think the 15 to 17 points is out of the question for this month or two.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't even think you can be a homer if you live in Australia. It's too far away, so, you know, it's good.
Yeah, you can see how bright exactly. It is here now. You know, I'm not in America since it's the middle of the day. It's about 100 degrees in this room that I'm in as well.
Jesus.
I'm sweating bullets.
it's actually, like, 6 degrees worse with wind here where I live, so it's a little variance up here where we got that's good,
like,
stuff.
I'd like to be feeling some of that cold
Let's
right now.
Let's trade. Yeah, holy shit. That's great. All right. Anything else that's burning that you... By the way, D'Angelo Russell, like, discourse, it just totally escapes my mind because I hate doing it. I just can't stand it.
Yeah, well,
we did so
much of it to start the season. Exactly. That it's like, he's playing better.
He just is who he is, right? Yeah.
He's playing better. And he's playing more... Like, him playing better is still not probably what this team needs or probably what, you know, we'd like to see from him every night. But he's not... at the point where he cannot be on the court at all anymore. And that's a plus. Like, when he plays well, you feel his impact. He's kind of got a little bit, tiny, weeny little bit of that, like, Anthony Edwards. Like, if he's playing really well, he helps you win. Because he just, like, he makes big plays. But it's only a tiny little weeny bit of it.
It's like, a tiny, tiny. I know what you mean, though. Like, if he's... like the Cavs game or something. Like
even just, like, even against Memphis, I thought in that fourth quarter he was really good
for sure.
Like, and he seemed like
more it's been like a 10-game stretch now where he's been at least average to above average.
Yeah.
Instead of
and passing the
first
ball,
percentile,
I think him and Gobert.
Yeah,
I think him and Gobert have kind of found a little bit of something. Like, it doesn't seem like those two are just like chalk and cheese anymore, you know, in terms of like what they're doing. So that's a plus. He's probably a worry for mine. I know I get shit on a lot for bagging D'Lo, but like, if D'Lo has to be your second best scorer, which he does at the moment, that worries me a lot, because I don't know how often you can count on him to score 20, 18, 19 points a game.
Those 18 box scores are going to hit different these next few weeks.
Yeah, that's like the opposite of post-traumatic stress. That's like future traumatic stress. I enjoy watching D'Lo when he's not playing terribly, which is probably the case with every fan. So, like,
right,
you know, there's not that much to talk about with him at the moment. I think Jalen Noel is probably one we could talk about. Like, I think I heard on, was it Flagrant Howes? Someone asked Phil and Kyle, and shout out to Flagrant Howes and to Phil and Kyle, who I love that show. That why don't we talk about Noel the same way we talk about Ant and McDaniels in terms of this team's future? And it kind of made me think, like, damn, like, that's not a terrible question, because there's a lot of Jalen Noel-level players around the league who are considered future stars. Jordan Poole before this season, probably, definitely one of them. You know, like, those scorers, if Jalen Noel played for the Hornets, he'd probably average 23 a night. Like,
Terry Rozier numbers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe we wouldn't talk about him because he plays for the Hornets, but, like, like, there is an argument that he is a guy who should be here in 5 years, you know, putting up 18 a game or something. Like,
he is so yeah, it's... Sorry to interrupt, but... Exactly, like, dude. There was, like, 2 weeks before these last couple of games where it was just... He was pressing so hard, and it's like, it looked like he knew.
So awful.
Oh, yeah. It looked like he just knew, like, this is a contract year, and I've got to be a scorer, so I'm going to take 15 shots, whether you like it or not. Oh, 15? Oh, man. And it was just
even in that Memphis game, like, he was shot chucking. Like, they were going in, but, like, he's
like, if you thought Malik Beasley was bad, whoo!
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But he's good. Like,
exactly.
He's good. He's inconsistent, but the same way with Anthony Edwards, like, they need him to be consistent now, because he's the guy who has to fill the town. I think that the Noel and McDaniels combined have to replicate some of Towns' 23 points a night. Like, you know, they have to fill that chasm, or else the Wolves are going to score 109 points like they did against Memphis every game, and it's not always going to be good enough to win, and probably not 75% of the time. So, like, Noel probably has to, you know, bump it up 4 or 5 points a night. Edwards will have to do the same. McDaniels will have to do the same. D'Lo will have to, like, it's going to have to be, like, a group experiment to fill Cat's void on offense. And for all the bagging on Cat that I did before defensively, like, he is a superb offensive player who scores a lot of points efficiently. And, like, they still need to find, you know, a way to replicate that with the group they've got now.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like you mentioned, all those guys, someone who might be looked at that has to take a step offensively, like Rudy Gobert, but to me, I don't want him to. Yeah, exactly.
I don't want him to have the ball, man.
As much as the Wolves are like, we've got to do this, it's no, please
no,
don't.
He'll just find like 12 points a night.
Right.
But the ball just coming to him, or like pick and roll is fine, you know, if it's a lob dunk, or if he doesn't have to dribble or take any sort of Euro step or spin or anything like that. But like, he'll find 12 points a night in the offense on like 7 shots, and that's fine with me.
Dude, Rudy Gobert, he's gotten under my skin a couple times this year because he will call for the ball like no one else, and then D'Lo will throw him the most beautiful lob you've ever seen, and they'll just like slip out of his hands. It's like, dude, you gotta catch it if you're gonna be this like...
He'll deep seal and wave his arms around, like, and it's like touching either baseline, either sideline, because his arms are so big, and they'll throw it to him, and it was just like he did not want the ball at all. Like when he gets it, he's just like, I don't know what to do. Yeah, yeah, I do not know what to do with this thing. Like, just turn around and dunk it, dude.
Dude, his Euro steps, like, he doesn't go forward. He just goes, like, horizontally and then puts up the worst-looking shot you ever... Like, he's really good at what he does. Like, he's elite at what he
really
does.
I actually really like him. Yeah, I really like him, man. Like, I want... But he's
Stop
one of those
trying to make it happen.
Yeah. He's one of those players that, like, in a very different way to Towns, where it's like, yes, we all understand that he's really good, but he's also, like, the most frustrating player to watch because... When things go bad, they go so badly for him.
Oh,
and, like,
God.
Just more often than not this season compared to the rest of his career, they have been going bad. But he's the one that we never really touched on, and, like, we don't know yet. But he's the guy that, like, maybe he's just really good again without Towns.
Right.
And, like, a really good
Rudy
Gobert.
I think they'll just play more to what he wants to do. Like, he mentioned himself, like, they're going to do a lot more spread, pick, and roll, and just the coverage they're not going to be playing two defensive coverages out there at times, like. I think it's going to be great for Rudy. And again, holy crap, that's a terrible indictment on the trade. But
yeah.
Everything circles back to that. But hey, that we're at where we are at right now. That's what we got to look at it as.
Yeah, so. I want to see them win a bunch of games, obviously, with Towns out. Like, I want to see them win a bunch of games when Towns isn't out. But, like, man, it's going to be some awkward and weird conversations if they go, like, 15-5 and Kat comes back, like, no, it's going to be toxic. There's going to be some toxicity in there along with those wins because, yeah, this franchise still needs to figure out the Towns and Gobert thing above all else. So, you know, or throw in the Towns, Gobert, and Ant thing. That's, I think, how it should be put because they're all tied to each other now. So hopefully they win games and then hopefully Kat comes back and they keep winning games. But,
dude,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's... As soon as the game ended, like, I've got the live chat because I do the live thing, and it was just rolling in. It was rolling in, like...
It was the most predictable thing ever.
Oh, my God. I was, like,
and
trying to handle it.
I knew they would win that first
of course.
Game. So I'm like, this is the most Wolves thing ever to do.
And I'm not just coming out being like, no. Like, I get it. They look better than they ever have. Yeah. Like, I can't just be like, you're an idiot. Like, no, that would make me an idiot.
No.
So, I get it.
No,
I do.
I mean, like we said at the start of the show, there's... It's very loaded, the question of the Towns thing, but, like, it would be naive of us not to, like, at least consider the possibility that they looked really good because Kat wasn't there. Like, that they did look really good because Kat wasn't there, or at least Kat wasn't there and they looked really good. Those two things are facts. Whether they, you know, are a correlation, we'd probably have to wait a few more games to find out. But, yeah, it would be stupid of us to just be like, well, they would have won that game anyway. Like, because I don't think they... Like, I personally don't think they would have won that game with Towns and Towns, because I don't think they would have been good enough defensively. Now, when they lose to OKC, 135 to, you know, 128, then I'll say they probably would have won that game because Kat would have got them an extra 10 points, you know? Like, so, it's for now, I'm just...
What a weird time to record a podcast, I'll say that. Like, every opinion's like, well, I don't really know, but, like...
It's been the whole season, though.
True.
I feel like all season it's just like walking on eggshells with everyone's opinions because we really don't know shit about this team or what they look like or whether the trade was a massive mistake or whether it just needs time or, you know, whether Anthony Edwards is just having a, you know, a slumpy kind of spell or whether Rudy Gobert and Carlton Towns are negating him from being great. And the same goes for, you know, each other, whether Kat can't play with Gobert or everything is just like, oh, I'm not sure yet. Like, we'll probably have to wait and see. Like, it's frustrating. It's frustrating, to be honest. Like, I'm kind of sick of it. So maybe this...
Yeah.
Maybe this month or 6 weeks will at least give us, like, yeah, we know that Kat's out and that there's this huge caveat hanging over the 6 weeks, but at least we'll get some answers to some other things, like whether Anthony Edwards can be great or Jaden McDaniels can score 17 a game, or if Rudy Gobert should exclusively be playing one defensive coverage and one offensive scheme as well, which would be spread pick and roll. So, I don't know. I'm excited. I am excited for the first time in probably a week, you know, after those three games that kind of sapped the life out of me, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a good place to be. Well, yeah, and the amount of people that have, like, come to me and been like, you changed your opinion from a few games ago, and I'm like, yeah, and I'm probably going to do it again when this team lays another egg. Like, of course I did.
we live in the world where if you just keep your opinion from game one, then you'd sound even more stupid. Like, you have to change your opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all based on what we see, so.
Yeah, every game is another bit of sample size for that opinion, whatever mm-hmm. opinion it is, so. I mean, you're doing a great job. Is that what you need to hear? Did you need me to say?
Yeah, this whole thing, I've just been fishing for you to just be like, hey, Cooper, it's okay, you're doing good.
It took me 48 minutes, but you are doing a great job, so I appreciate it.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it's I love the cut. They're great, but it's just, you know, either way. Jake, thanks for hopping on, and to Jake's audience, because I'm also on yours right now.
Yes, you are. So thank you to everyone on my podcast for listening. Obviously, go and follow Coop Timbles Daily on YouTube. Subscribe. What do they say? Hit the bell. Is that a thing?
Hit the bell. I don't ever hit the bell,
man. What's the bell do?
It gives you notifications when I post a video, right. But just like check your subscriber feed, man.
Yeah. Hit the bell.
Subscribe. Smash that like button.
Smash it. Like, absolutely demolish that like button. But only after you listen to it on my podcast.
Right. All right, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. It's always a blast. Thank you, man. I'm sure we'll do this again soon. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Eventually.
For sure. Thanks, dude.